Good morning, everyone. Is everyone awake and ready?
Good.
Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. You know, my father passed away this last week before. Swami Muktananda sent an email with a quote from Swami Ramdas that I thought I would read. The eternal has no death, and the perishable cannot escape dissolution. Then why grieve over the dead? Every death, every loss awakens us to reality. Hence, take it that these happenings are for our good. We have our abode here as in a dharmashala. Father, mother, husband, wife, and children all come together for a while, only to be separated, because each one of them is on his or her way to him, from whom they all come. Let us not forget that we come alone into the world, and that we depart also from it alone. Swami Ramdas. And from Master, just as an individual forsaking dilapidated raiment dons new clothes, so the new body-encased soul, relinquishing decayed bodily habitations, enters others that are new. And Master's commentary. A delusion-steeped individual considers in practice, even if not in theory, his body, family, and position as invulnerable. Therefore, at the sudden advent of death in the family, he is shocked and bewildered. Notwithstanding the difference between the immortal soul and the changeable mortal body, he is stricken with grief and horror when he witnesses death or sees himself nearing it. He finds it very difficult to maintain mental balance when confronted by the seemingly cruel death, arriving like a tyrant to mar the harmony and peace of life. Usually, it is not difficult for an individual to give up old garments when he has the prospect of a new one. But some persons are so deeply attached to their possession that they are loath to discard even worn-out but highly prized clothing. Similarly, ordinary mortals, no matter what wisdom is offered them, grieve when they have to give up their much-loved bodies. Because the ordinary body-bound individual is lacking in divine inner assurance of the continuity of life, and has no recollection of the countless times he, the soul, has walked in and out of portals of birth and death, he is full of fear as well as grief at the approach of death. As children fear the possibility of meeting ghosts in the dark, so some people are afraid of the unknown awaiting them beyond the door of death. As frightening ghost stories are told by people with strong imaginations, so death is depicted by ignorant men as gruesome and terrible experience. In sleep every night, an individual discards the consciousness of the tired body and mind, and so finds peace. In the greater sleep of death, A man forsakes the disease-torn body and the attachment-corroded mind for a restful state of joy. From joy, people are born. For joy, they live. In joy, they melt at death. Death is an ecstasy, for it removes the burden of the body and frees the soul of all pain springing from body identification. It is the cessation of pain and sorrow. Though death is often erroneously associated with a state of suffering, the physical tortures of disease are far worse than the liberating experience of death. Often the consciousness passing out of the old body at death feels a wonderful sense of release and peace. So this is death. Oh, how nice! It is not at all what I thought. I am life apart from the sensitive, troublesome body. God's anesthetic of death has removed from me all physical pain. For a time, there may linger a sense of mental suffering of losing the physical body and of parting with loved ones. How can I leave those whom I have thought were mine? There is then a gradual diminishment of memories of earthly existence. Ordinary persons enjoy the rest of a peaceful death sleep in the astral heaven. Virtuous souls alternate sleep with wakefulness in this land of blissful freedom and beauty. Devoid of the harsh, often destructive clashes of gross matter, these virtuous astral beings move freely and at will in bodies of light through endless tracts of rainbow-hued densities of luminosity that inform multivaried electronic landscapes, scenes, and beings. Their very breath and sustenance are rays of subtle lifetrons. In time, again determined by their karma, their mortal inclinations, transgressions, and latent material desires draw them back into new physical embodiments. As desire for life brings the sleeping man to a state of wakefulness, so subconscious desires for lost physical body and for the earth environment act as vibratory attractive forces that re-embody the soul again within the mother's womb. A bird, long confined in a cage, may return to it even when it is set free. So also a man much attached to bodily existence desires to return to a physical form even after being released by death. Long imprisonment in a cage makes the bird forget its free home in the skies. Similarly, the soul consciousness of man, confined in bodily prison through many incarnations, forgets its free, blessed home in vast space. It takes a long time, many incarnations of right action, good company, help of the Guru, self-awakening wisdom, and meditation, for man to regain his soul consciousness of immortality. To reach this state of self-realization, each man must practice meditation to transfer his consciousness from the limited body to the unlimited sphere of joy felt in meditation. By continuous unity with spirit and samadhi, by non-attachment to the body, the devotee realizes the body as a temporary place of confinement. He looks forward eagerly to return to his home of everlasting blessedness and spirit. Devotees who are not rudely hurled out of the flesh by death, but who depart in conscious dignity, through meditation-acquired power, find their way back to the oneness of the omnipresent bliss. Swami Pranabhananda, an exalted disciple of Lahari Mahasya, who was about to transfer his soul from the limitations of physical body to the omnipresent kingdom of spirit, found his disciples crying. "Beloved ones," he said consolingly, "I have long been with you, serving you with joy of divine wisdom. Please do not be selfish about your loss in me, but rejoice that I am discarding the prison house of my body and having worked out my long term of karmic obligation. I go now to reclaim my kingdom of omnipresence, to meet my cosmic beloved. So saying, he blessed the devotees, and practicing the advanced technique of Kriya Yoga, consciously left his body. Master was truly a master in all senses of the word. He could withdraw his life force from the afferent and efferent nerves, center it in the spine, lift it up in consciousness, and escape into omnipresent freedom. And because of that, he had gradually realized through repeated experience that he was not this body, with all of its limitations and its frailties. He was omnipresent spirit. He existed before this body came into being. He existed long after it would dissolve back into the earth form. And yet, when his own master died and left the body, he grieved for it. He grieved piteously. He was very morose in a way. He said he was able to carry out all of his normal obligations. He gave talks. He carried on life as before. And yet there was something inside of him that was not fully awake as it had been before. He felt as if he were living in a kind of a dream. And it wasn't until his master, Sri Yukteswar, resurrected in bodily form and revealed to him many of the long-born secrets of what it was to pass into eternal life, that he felt totally awakened in spirit again. It's an interesting story. It's a strange story, for Master was indeed a master of himself and had known and discovered the truth within himself. And yet this strange play was enacted so that Sri Yukteswar might find a way of imparting some immortal advice to give us a glimpse of what life is like beyond the body. And indeed, this is available to us, not just through a departed one, but that we might have glimpses, we might have absolute and pure knowledge of what life is like beyond this mortal body. Through my spiritual practice, God has granted at various times that I would have glimpses into past life and past times, also into what a departing soul encounters along the way. One time, there was a devotee of mother's who passed from the body. He was deeply in love with his wife, but his wife was not fully giving towards him, and so he had left the body with an unfulfilled desire. He deeply wanted her reciprocity and love that she was not able to fully give him. And so he was finding himself glued to her while she was in a living form and he in an incorporeal form. And as it were, God took me to him at that time in order to help him to make that transition, for he could have stayed fixated upon that form of his wife and not allowed himself to go into the higher regions of what we call the astral worlds. And so it was there that I encountered him, and he was as in a trance. He was completely fixated upon her. He didn't fully realize or comprehend that he had left the body. And so it was through working with him and waking him gradually, because he wasn't willing at first, but gradually he began to awaken the reality around him, to the reality that he had left the body, to the reality that the love that he was looking for would not come from that form, and that he was retarding his own progress by not allowing himself to go forward. And so he began to then open himself to the possibility of a greater reality, a reality of light, a reality of those who were there to help him to make that transition. And as he opened his eyes to this reality, it became apparent to him, and he allowed himself then to be taken, and to be taken into a world of greater freedom. there are those souls who die with addictions of different sorts, of physical addictions, of alcohol, of drugs, and other kinds of addictions. And when they leave the body, there are times when they are so fixated upon their addiction, they too do not fully comprehend that they have left their body. They are only thinking about their addiction. And they will go to the places of addiction. If it's alcohol, they may go to a bar. If it's drugs, they may go to familiar humps where they got their drugs and injected their drugs or took their drugs in various ways. They will, if possible, attach themselves to other souls who are also addicts because they have a weakened ego, and therefore they are open and ripe to be having other souls attached to them. And they try to get some of their fix by attaching themselves to those bodies with weakened egos. And so these things go on all the time. There is help for these individuals, but they oftentimes don't allow it. They don't want anything to do it, much like they ignored good advice in the physical body, so they ignore the same advice once they have left the physical body. They don't want to have anything to do with the light because it threatens their addiction. And it is through their addiction that they falsely think they will achieve God's bliss. It is through the bottle, it is through a needle, it is through taking different drugs or gambling or other kinds of addictions that have taken over their life. And these are very sad cases indeed, because they go on even after death, living in these very narrow, confined realms. Now, there are other individuals who, not having much of a sense of anything beyond the body and the five senses and their role that they play in this world, when they leave the body, they just simply go into a deep sleep, a rest that they can carry on. They're not very conscious. Perhaps they will have dreams of being in the astral realms, but then they'll fall into a very deep rest again. They have not yet developed the consciousness of having any other awareness beyond this physical awareness, so they continue on in those confines. You see, there's no magical solution in leaving the body. Leaving the body is a continuation of the consciousness that was had here in the material body. Only if the individual has a somewhat developed state of consciousness, they will rise up and they will realize there's a closer unity with their soul consciousness. And for those individuals, when they leave the body, they rise up and they're aware of their own Christ self. Now, they may see this Christ self as a great being of light who is sitting with them in review of their own life. And when they have an awakened consciousness to this extent, they will be able to see their life from their soul's point of view. And this soul's point of view will be awakened to the inner Christ light, and there may be those helpers that are there with them in order to review the life, and they will feel sorry for some decisions and actions that they made along the way, ways that they did not grow, ways that they perhaps held grudges or there were habits that maintained themselves throughout their life. Things that they wish they did not have. And they also see the accomplishments, the things that they did in this lifetime. And they feel good about that. They know that they've grown as an individual. And they take those lessons with them. And they continue on because their life in the afterlife, so to speak, is just as full of learning, just as full of life, just as full of everything that we have here in this material world, only more closely attuned to the light. Now, for those souls who are of a very darkened consciousness and yet awaken to a greater reality, they too awaken, but they don't have that same kind of review of their life. They don't have regrets because they've not awakened to that reality yet. And they enter into a darkened region, what we might call hell. Only for them, it feels quite natural. They see their competitors, They see there people who are out to get them, and so they seek to get the other person before they get them. Do unto others before they do it unto you is their law. It's not the golden rule, but it is a rule. And so they act on this, and they enter into regions of warfare and conflict, and they're quite engaged in this, and they think this is what life is made up of. It's not different than the life that they had here, where they saw everyone as a potential enemy. And they thought they'd better do it to them first. And they carry that on. Then there are the souls of a higher awakened reality. These more refined souls enter into the region of the astral world and astral life. They are born into an astral family. And they carry on there in a more subtle realm. They have a life there, even as we have a life here, only it is more expanded, it is more free. They're able to travel in a light body. It's not subject to the aches and pains and difficulties that this body is. It's not subject to the kind of destruction that this body is. It's more highly attuned to the world of light. And they help to work their own karma out through that. But if they have not resolved their desire nature and their attraction to this world, they're gradually drawn back down into this world again. Even as we, in our New Year's resolutions, resolve to change our life and to do things differently, nevertheless, as the year drags on, we're drawn back down into our old habits again, much against our own will at the time of making the New Year's vow. And so, too, the astral being feels a draw, feels an attraction to come to this earth plane in order to work out its earth karma that can be uniquely done here. And so that individual is drawn back down to a new mother, to a new father, to a new life here. And depending on their behavioral pattern and their habits and what kind of karma they need to work out is determined by which that determines what kind of family they're drawn into. They're drawn into the genetic soup that the mother and father offer as genes. But there are many genetic codes that can be switched on and off. And as that individual becomes attached to the forming body within the mother, it begins to switch on and switch off the genetic codes that uniquely suit it as a soul. And it's already been drawn to a mother and father who have the right genetics for it to work out its own karma. And so the soul comes in and starts anew with all of its old tendencies and habits residing within the subconscious mind. And as it lives this life, those genetic tendencies and those subconscious tendencies begin to work themselves out. Now, within all of that is free will. And the individual can overcome its old tendencies, its own habits. But we call those old habits temptations because they come along oftentimes to awaken darkened memories or desire natures that don't serve us well. And yet there they are in all of their living glory. We thought that we could escape them at death, then, but it's not so. And so this life is a battleground. And we go through many, many lives such as this, and the consciousness becomes more and more refined. Now, when the consciousness finally comes to the point where it really determines within itself that it wants a higher consciousness, it wants to attune itself to a greater life. It has those subconscious thoughts of the astral being, and perhaps even realms higher than the astral life, more refined. It knows that it's not limited to this corporal form that will one day dissolve into worm food. It wants to discover the higher realities that lie just underneath the conscious mind. And when that desire nature grows strong enough, that one attracts to itself the higher teachings, attracts to itself a guru, one who is capable of leading that individual from the darkness to the light. That's what guru means, darkness to light. But still, the tests are there. The old subconscious patterns are there.
But as that one dives deeper into meditation, discovers even while living in a human body, that there are divine potentialities to be awakened, potentialities of joy, of bliss, of peace, of light. As that one begins to immerse itself into those higher qualities, those qualities take on a greater kind of gravity, you might say, than those old habits that drew it down into the lower tendencies. It's just like if you have a tendency for something fairly kind of gross, but you gradually develop a more refined sense about music, about food, about clothing, about interior decorating, all of these things. And you would just not be attracted any longer to the old, grosser forms. You really yearn for and desire to have the more refined forms. And you might say that all of these forms contain a vibration. And now your eyes are opening to the fact that everything contains a vibration, is an emanation of that vibration. You begin to attune your mind more and more finely to that refined vibration. Now your consciousness is not so much of the physical realm, but you feel things energetically. You feel things astrally. Because your astral body, you don't have to go anywhere to have experiences in the astral body. Your astral body is right where you are. Now your consciousness is transferred somewhat more to the astral body. You live in the astral body as much as you do in the physical body. Now you gradually increase the level of vibration of consciousness. Now you're residing more and more in the causal realm. That is the realm of ideas. You realize how ideas spawn energy. Energy spawns physical manifestation. Everything begins with an idea. You realize the importance of ideas, of your thinking, and you begin to regulate it much more closely because you realize that every thought is a creation. Jesus once gave the maxim that if you think it, it is already done. Well, that's quite a thing to encounter. Our thoughts normally are quite random and wild. And to think that every time that we have a thought, that we're creating that thought, well, that's really something. And in the causal realm, it's true. If you think on something strong enough, long enough, hard enough, then you will gradually bring that into manifestation, whether it is positive or whether it is negative. And as you attune yourself more and more spiritually, you realize the importance of these thoughts. There can be no thought that escapes you that is not of creative power. And so you really start to take responsibility for your thinking. This is the causal realm. And as you move from the astral or the energetic realm to the causal, you grow in power. You grow in expansiveness. You grow in your attunement to the light if you're focused on that. Because even in the causal, there is light and there is darkness. And there are those who dwell in the causal realm, but in a negative way. But when you're growing in that light, you grow towards attunement with the light. And you realize that there is an existence that is beyond thought. It is pure in its essence. It is ever existent. It has always existed. And so as you attune yourself to that, you realize the superiority of spirit over causal or over thought. Now you are dwelling more and more in pure spirit. Now there are those who are traveling up and down this ladder of consciousness. They go from the physical to the astral to the causal to the spirit, and then they're back down to the physical again. They're not yet completely anchored in the divine. And so the tests continue to come, but when they leave the body, they have the potentiality of moving into any one of those spheres depending on where what their desire nature calls to them. Now, there can be those who think that, well, just at the last minute, I'll have only the most positive thoughts, and I'll go to the highest realms, and I'll kind of skin the cat, so to speak. But this isn't how it works. If you think about it, really deeply think about it, and you're thinking about your last moments, perhaps your breathing may be a little bit heavy labored. You may be having some pain or difficulties in the body. And you realize that you're coming to your last moment, and you take that last breath. Wouldn't the most natural thing be to think about taking in the next breath? Well, you've just sealed your fate. You're moving on into the next bodily incarnation at some point, because that's the only way you can fulfill that desire. That's a strong desire, isn't it, to have that? In contrast to that, think about taking that last breath, but you take it consciously. You take it as if you were in meditation, a deep meditation. And when you take that last breath and you expend that breath, Espiritus means to breathe. And when you take that last breath, you breathe out, and you breathe out with it your soul, your spirit. You expand yourself out beyond the body because you are no longer relegated to believing that you are this body alone. You have visited the realm of spirit many, many times. It has become an inborn habit within you because you are so acquainted with expending out that breath and then not needing to breathe again, perhaps for some time. And as you let that breath go out, you feel your spirit go out from your body. You feel yourself merge into omnipresent spirit. You don't think about leaving loved ones because where are you to go? You're going into omnipresence. You will co-mingle with all loved ones, whether of this material world or other places. You're not going someplace. You will be in all places. Your love spreads out throughout all creation. You sense and you feel the light of God in every particle of space, and you are a part of all of it. You are in absolute and total freedom. All you have to do is have some person or some place come to mind, and you are there with them. You are there in that place. There are no limitations to you. The ego plays a wonderful trick on us. And it says in the ego mind that if you go into God consciousness, now you will be limited. Now you won't have access to the physical realm anymore. Now you won't have all the freedom that you enjoyed as a wonderful ego mind. Well, this is a trick of the ego, of course. This is what Jesus called Satan. It's the opposing force. It projects onto God consciousness the very attributes that ego consciousness has itself. Ego consciousness is the limitation. Ego consciousness is without freedom. Ego consciousness is bound like a very, very small box. And yet that's what it projects onto God consciousness and tells you constantly that you will have less freedom, not more, if you go with God. It's a complete and total lie. It's only when we anchor ourselves in the divine that we awaken ourselves to the true and absolute knowledge, I am Spirit, blessed Spirit, I am He. You rise beyond all creation. You rise beyond even vibratory levels. You rise beyond all ideas. And you merge into Spirit Absolute. Now you are completely and totally free, without limit. And all of this you can do, and this is the great secret, all of this you can do while you are in physical form. It is why Master prescribes meditation. Dive deep into Spirit. Meditation is not just a form. Meditation is not just putting in some time, morning and night. Meditation is merging your mind into the divine omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience. What is there not to like about that? What is there not to strive for? But you see how deluded we get
You see how complacent we get with being just this little tiny corporal form, with a manas, with a mind that is wedded to these senses, thinking this is the be-all and the end-all, and that something beyond this would be frightening, would be scary somehow, or that it's not possible to achieve to. These are all lies told to us by the human ego. We must challenge these lies. We must go beyond them. We must go beyond our fears. We must go beyond our attachments if we are to really merge ourselves into the divine omnipresence. When someone who is of good virtues leaves the body, that one is not to be mourned, not really. We may feel a feeling of loss that we won't see them in the body as we once did. We may feel some of those feelings of loss around that, but we can equally feel a great happiness for that individual, particularly if they have struggled in the body for some time. They are free. They are now sailing in the seas of a greater omnipresence. They are now in their light body. As I meditated and prayed for my father just prior to leaving the body, I saw him in his light form. And he was of a young body. He was smiling. He was easy. There was no fear in him. There was no great feeling of loss. And there have been many times since that time when, through my inner vision, I have seen that form. And his primary concern was for his wife, for my mother. And he wanted to be sure that she was taken care of, that she was looked after. And I reassured him that she will be. And I've seen with him my grandfather, his father, and my grandmother, his mother, smiling and very easy. Death is not something to be feared. Now, we cannot check out early. We have to go with the natural rhythm of things. But death is actually something to be embraced. We give up the limitations of this body. But you know, once we give up the limitations of this body, we're held somewhat accountable. We hold ourselves accountable for how we spent our life, the things that we focused on. And it's a wonderful meditation to think on, when you leave this body, what will stand out in your life? What are those things that will really speak to you? And it probably won't be the monthly bills that you paid. It probably won't be the little things of life that seem to so consume us, and the things that we seem to spend so much time thinking on and worrying about. Those things will fade into insignificance. Those things that are lasting, those things that are very important to us, that are essential to us, they will easily come to mind if we really put ourselves into that moment. What are those life lessons that you have come to learn? What are those things that you really want to get right, that if you don't get them right this time, you'll feel that you have missed on an opportunity while living here? My middle brother was asking me what I thought of after death. And so I gave him some description of it as I understand it. And he said, well, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of judgment there, or that there's a kind of a hellish experience that's oftentimes described by different people. I said, it's only what we create for ourselves. We judge ourselves. It's the light of our own being. We can't fool ourselves. Here in this material existence, here while we exist in an ego mind, we can push away the truth. We can push away what we know to be true and live with a fantasy or make excuses for our own desire nature. We can do that, even though deep down we know what the truth is. But in our soul's existence, we don't have that comfort of pushing away the light. The light comes on us, and it is our own light of understanding. It is our own wisdom. And it is through that light that we feel good or we feel bad about the things that we have done. But if you really use this meditation upon death, what we call death, which is really an awakening to a greater life, if you really meditate on that, you'll know the real purposes for which you have come. There may be what we might think of as a bit more mundane purposes. Family, friends, work. All of these things are important in a life. They can't be discounted. But then there are those other things. Things of realization. Things of opening the heart. Things of the Spirit. And gifts of the Spirit. That are also very, very important. More important. And those are the things that are to be attained through our spiritual practice. Let us not live our life in an unmindful state, pushing away the light of truth as we truly know it. Let us be sensitized to those higher elements. It doesn't mean that we live a life that is devoid of any responsibility in this world. We have responsibilities. We have things to learn about this world. But we also have those more subtle areas to grow in, to really learn about. Our oneness with God stands preeminent among those. And particularly for those of us who have been called to a path such as ours, to be able to really merge the little human mind into the divine mind, to merge into it so thoroughly, so completely, to work through all of our fears and desire natures, that we really come to know through and through and through that we are really divine beings, not limited in this encasement of clay, not limited to the little human puny mind, not limited even to an individualistic soul, but a completely and totally free being, a Jiva Mukta, as is called in India. Let this be a clarion call for all of us to awaken to this in a greater degree, with more determination, with more tenacity than ever before. I'd like to close with a reading from the Katha Upanishad. This Katha Upanishad is a discussion between an individual soul and death. He makes the request, and he makes it in such a way that death can't refuse him. So death is giving him the secret of death, which is really, of course, the secret of life. That pure consciousness, which is all-knowing, indwelling self, is neither born nor does it die. It did not originate from anything, nor has it become anything. Unborn, undying, constant. It lives when this body dies. Those who think it can be destroyed or that it destroys, neither of them knows. For the self does not destroy nor can it be destroyed. Smaller than the smallest particle of an atom, and yet more vast than the whole expanse of space. This self resides in the heart of all beings. Only those who have withdrawn their hopes from this world are open to the grace of that glorious self, and only they see it. Unmoving, the self moves. Moving, it remains ever still. How is it known? That which is beyond all joy and sorrow, and yet is embodied in both the joyful and the sorrowing? One who meditates on that self, which is formless in the midst of all forms, eternal in the midst of the momentary, which is everywhere at once and great beyond compare. Such a one will know that self and finally cease all grieving. That self will not be found through much learning, thinking, or listening. What are the valid means of knowing it? I will tell you. It is known only through the self within, by the grace of that which the seeker seeks. That self alone reveals itself in its own glory. Who has not attained tranquility or is corrupt, who has not turned away from the brief satisfactions of this world and attained the stillness of mind, such a person cannot know the self. Though learned beyond compare, ah, who indeed can truly know that self, which even the highest born are brought low, before which death itself is reduced to nothing. So let us really enter into the stillness of the inborn self, discover that, and open ourselves to the grace of being lifted into the highest divine consciousness. I once summed up all of Mother's teachings as, keep your mind on God. It's ultimately a simple teaching and yet difficult to enact, only because the human mind races from here to there to everywhere. But let us enact that practice, keeping the mind always on God, whether eating or working or sleeping. Whatever we may be doing, the mind is ever attuning itself to that divine vibration, keeping itself ever in a harmony and alignment with the divine within. And if you will do this, you will know such freedom, such peace, such harmony, such love, the everythingness of God will become yours. And how can anything in this world compare with that? Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection, surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Amen. Pranam, I bow to the light within you all.